It's the Daily Talk Show, episode 712, and it is Georgie Boy here. I'm here all week, and I hope everyone has recovered from the 24-hour marathon that we did on Friday. I'm feeling good, and I'm putting together all of the interviews that were recorded that day and releasing them as individual episodes. So later down the week, you'll get to hear Christian Hull and Steph and Laura, the Kick Girls, Ryan Shelton. It's going to be amazing. To start with, this is Brad Blanks. It was recorded at 8 a.m. on the Friday, and a really fun chat. We love Brad Blanks, so I hope you enjoy this one.
Brad Blanks.
Oh, here he is.
Give me a second. I'm just going to turn on your mic, Brad. There you go. How are you, Brad?
Look at, great. Look at these legends. Oh, beautiful to be with you fellas. What a thing you're doing, you guys. Just inspired by your magic of what you're going to put out for the next 23 hours. So, good luck.
I'm just glad that you said that you'd... what time is it where you are, Brad?
Nearly 6 p.m. So, we're preparing dinner, all that sort of stuff. But, I'll continue to check in over the next 23 hours and make sure everyone's upright and staying spot on and on the ball. So,
have you done anything outrageous? I mean, Brad, you've been in Elmo once, which can you tell that story?
Yeah, that was 2007, and it was one of those deals. I was a sidekick on a morning radio show. I know you guys have been there before. Tommy, I you were a host of a show. I don't know if you were ever a sidekick, were you, Tommy, at all.
Depends who you asked, because we were both sidekicks. If you asked individual.
Yeah, and that's very good. I like that. Every year I'd do one big stunt because I just didn't want to be the stunt guy, but I was the stunt guy. So on the Scott and Todd show and WPLJ, so they dressed me up as Elmo, and it was a beautiful Elmo, probably the most expensive Elmo suit you could get. Fiberglass head. Hessian suit with redness on the outside. It was perfect. And they had me do a 21 miles through New Jersey, the suburbs of New Jersey. The first 7 miles was on a kid's baby BMX. The next 7 miles were on a scooter. And the final 7 miles, I was jogging. And that was my stunt to finish that through. I went for about 4 counties. And with counties, it's like the old Dukes of Hazzard where police aren't allowed to go from county to county. And the police gave me an escort. They loved it. The police were all on board, right? But as we get to a county border, I have a four police car cavalcade and me in the middle, Elmo, dressed, and the police would fan off and the next set of cars would join me, Elmo, as we keep traveling through New Jersey. I think I caused about 3 traffic accidents as well and shut down the whole of North New Jersey during that stunt. But yes, but nothing as wild as a 24-hour broadcast. This is very commendable, fellas.
I feel that's more physically, more physical exertion than what we're doing. What do you think's more tough, physical or the mental exertion that we're doing?
They're both equally important in life. Mental will be tough. Smelling the smells that you all will exude out of your bodies. You're in different locations, so that's good, right? Yeah, we're all split up, I guess. Or is there anyone next to each other? Oh, good. There'll be a lot of sweating moments. There'll be interviews that will go sideways and blood will run to all parts of your body. You've been there before, guys.
Well, I mean, I feel like you've been there more than us. What's the...
I have.
What's the tip? When something's going sideways, what do you do? Especially, we don't have the likes of Ricky Gervais or Jennifer Aniston on the show today, but close.
Well, you actually have really good-looking people come on your show. So it's a good-looking show you put out there. But when it really went sideways for me once was I was hosting a live event with about 300 people, and it was for Coldplay. So it was Coldplay were on stage, this little intimate club. It's called the China Club. And it had every music executive from every different label all radio executives in there. And I was, the man in the crowd doing interviews, interviewing them up on stage, trying to get everyone involved. And I asked Johnny, Chris Martin's, let's call him, I shouldn't call him a sidekick, but I said, Johnny, are you going to host a cigar night when Chris has his next baby? Like that. And Chris stopped everything and said, mate, that's a personal question. You can't ask that in this environment. Chris Martin said that to me. And and the blood just rushed. It actually goes to your bottom first, the blood. Yeah, I don't know what that means. And things just tightened up and the sweat started pouring down and I was crushed. And someone else quickly took up and they moved on to the next topic. And the only way you can come back is come up with a funny question or something entertaining 2 minutes later. And if you can get that happening, you can get back on track quickly. But even just talking about it now, I'm sweating, I'm perspiring. It was probably the most painful experience of my life. Yeah, but so it'll happen to you guys today.
I already feel, I know that it's going to happen. Brad, when we spoke to you, that was sort of early ISO. Are you finding a groove? Yes. How's things going?
Yeah, it's a mental, it's mentally wild, isn't it? Because you guys are ambitious guys. You want to fit a lot into your day. You talked about, I think, you know, Tommy, is it your missus that's going to do the 5:30 get ups in the morning? Yeah. Is that yeah. So we all want to do all these things, and the big depression mounts when you start not getting stuff done. You know, in this sort of ISO, and you start going, "Geez, this was going to be my moment to write War and Peace." This was my moment to write the next great novel.
When did you realize? Is there a specific moment, Brad, where you're like, oh, fuck, this is not happening?
Yeah. Yeah. When your actual day job really kicks in, and my day job's being on radio, and then your day job asks more and they want more and more, and you're like, oh, geez, this day job's actually quite hard. You know, so it sort of exploded the job in terms of Zooming people and doing interviews. And then when you want to do something for yourself, you're kind of like, a bit lazy. I'll go have a beer, early beer, or I'll try and do 20 sit-ups. I get to like 15.
Oh, sorry, Brad.
No, that was great.
We're 3 minutes late. We're at the 23 hour mark. It took me, I actually had to download that file.
That's awesome.
Sorry to interrupt you halfway through.
I thought you were about to bring Pitbull on.
I don't know what happened then, but I think I felt like what you felt like in that interview. I just sort of zoned out. I was like,
yeah, me too.
I felt in control, so it actually felt quite good. You know, I just doing the, we're 4 minutes late on the hour thing. We were trying to do that every single hour. So,
that's probably fair, Josh. We probably went about 4 minutes late or a couple of minutes late to the 7 a.m. start. So,
Hey, I got a question for you guys.
Okay.
So Mr. 97's become a legend. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. he's, you know, when ISO comes down and he fires up his Tinder, it's going to be an avalanche.
Well, he doesn't. He found a girlfriend on ISO, Brad.
Really? You found a girlfriend? what happened?
Oh, my God.
You have a girlfriend in ISO?
This is what happened on the red carpet, what we're seeing.
This is great.
Yeah, so what happened, Mr. 97? You've been snagged, have you?
Yeah, well, I mean, Grace, who listened to the show, we started messaging, and she's great. She's so much fun. So we're a bit of a thing.
Boyfriend and girlfriend now, so.
Jeez, Tommy and Josh, look what you're doing. You're changing lives.
Yeah, it was all us.
Really? We're trying, buddy.
It was all us.
We're trying. Now, your other guy that you've added to the show. Give me a rundown of this fella.
Yeah, so there's George. So George is great. Yep. He's an epic editor. He's very good at putting together. He reminds me of, you remember like Ryan Shelton would do those great Rove segments or whatever. He's just got a great sense of timing and comedy and all that sort of thing. So yeah, George, he's actually editing right now. He's doing highlights of all the 24 hours, which will come out next week.
That's fantastic. So George, was there a video of him sleeping in a sleeping bag or somewhere, and then you woke him up or something?
I don't know.
The Hump Day replay.
Oh, that might have been the Hump Day replay.
Yeah, the Hump Day replay. Yes. Yeah, that was a big Friday night drinks.
Right. Oh, anyway, you've got a great cast surrounding there. Mr. 97, George, the young fella from Bathurst.
Charles is helping us. It's great. And so you're going to join us in the middle of the night. I think I can't remember the exact time. Yeah. What was the time that we? So at
4 a.m. 4 a.m. Yeah, your time.
4 a.m. our time.
Yeah, as well. That's good. Yeah.
And then after that, we have Hamish Blake, who I believe is joining us on a training bike. I said, hey, we're thinking like it'd be great for us all to go on bikes. The only thing is we haven't been able to organize bikes. I don't know if it's a bit of a stitch up if he rocks up in Lycra and sort of ready for a ride on camera. But
what time do you have, Hamish?
4:40. So you're you can do the handover. You can do the do the high five.
That'll be wonderful.
Have you been to Manhattan at all since we last spoke?
No. I haven't. No, it's crazy. Now I heard from a friend of mine who was in the epicenter of all that Queens disaster that we spoke about with the Elmhurst Hospital, just a couple of miles out of Manhattan. And he said he lost a lot of people in the neighborhood, which is very sad. But his words were it was the epicenter of it all. And but that hospital now is relatively calm. So unfortunately, a lot of people passed, but they got over that. They've got over that hump. But New York's still a ghost town.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys getting back to things opening and shit now or?
Out in Long Island, there's movement, still, obviously, it's all, we want restaurants and bars, but that's never going to happen, but that's not going to happen. And, we're out near a beach, and so that's sort of a festive area. Who knows what summer's going to bring, is summer going, it won't be like previous summers, obviously. So, we're not sure.
Where did you take us for lunch, Brad, when we were in New York City? We went somewhere uptown, was it?
Yeah, where did
you
where
like
did
it? It's a nice lunch place.
A lot of seats. Yeah, I don't know if that helps.
Don't know. Did we go to the coffee shop? Was the coffee shop?
Bree's got a very good memory for that stuff.
I mean, it seemed quite fancy. Yeah. I mean, I was like, look at this joint. This looks fancy. But I was thinking like...
Was it the following day?
It was the day
after. Have you got it in your calendar? Do you have sort of a calendar, Brad, of all...
Yeah, I've got to find that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm going to look that up. But... Yeah, sorry, Tom.
But I feel like you just sort of waltzed in. It was like lunchtime. It was a real New York experience. I felt like an Aussie dude had really sort of just lent in. I mean, you are a New Yorker. You've been there for what, nearly 20 years or something?
20 years. Yeah, 01, October 01.
But the people out in New York, like just lunchtime at these busy restaurants, like I feel like for it to switch back to that straight away is going to be super hard. Don't you think?
Yeah, you've nailed it. No, it's super hard. Like to unpack this is craziness because I've gone to New York because I want to be around the people, the excitement, the buzz, everything you read about. Like I was a Woody Allen fan and Seinfeld fan, and then I want to be there, and everything I loved that drove me to get there, and then I get there and I sort of live like a normal person. So I'm living like Woody Allen, but that's probably not a good example to live like. Anyway, that's a whole other story. But but it's a city where stories are developing every day in your life, and people you're bumping into and it's all about bumping into or crashing into people. Is that crashing into effect that makes it such a glorious place to live in going to be there? I have three children. We've stayed in the city. We have a small apartment there that we love. We have a great, great building and a good area. And you're like, what's the, are we at a stage where we think we have to move out? We haven't started asking those questions, but it's along those lines.
Well, Brad, your wife's from London, isn't she? Or England, isn't she?
Yeah, England. That's right. Yep.
And so then English. You're an Aussie. What accent do your kids have? The three kids that have grown up in England.
Remember when Elle Macpherson got that what do they call it? The transatlantic accent, I think.
It's a bit international school sort of thing.
Yeah, it's all screwed up. but the big ones were Elle Macpherson, Kylie Minogue all got those weird accents and they have that. But then they say Manhattan like that, which is funny because we live on the east side of Manhattan, and that is a very Long Island. It's really interesting how you can live on one side of a skinny island and they sound like Lindsay Lohan from who grew up in the middle of Long Island. So I always say to them, "Don't you sound like Lindsay Lohan?" Coming from me, obviously, you know, the broadest country accent you can have. But anyway, weird accents for my kids.
How do you, like, Brad, you've got great access to people. Like, you had Ricky Gervais or whatever. You've had the Tiger King guy. Do you have any tips for securing great guests?
Great, yes. Good question. And as I said before, my day job's exploded. Zoom has been good for me.
Yeah.
You know, people are wanting to chat, and you guys are probably finding that. And but secure, like, if you're dealing with a publicist or, you know, their team, I always say it's going to be fun, it's going to be easy, and it'll be quick. You know, you can save all the dirty jokes surrounding the setup I gave you then. It's not how you want to promote yourself when you're in a nightclub. You know, Mr. 97, don't say those things.
He doesn't go to nightclubs. You're safe.
Lisa's fun. Lisa's fun.
Lisa's fun, yeah.
Mrs. Lisa. Yeah, so, no, but you want to put the... Look, it's all a publicist game, right, in terms of what I'm chasing, you know, and you've got to, and then it's their reputation with their client. They're being paid by their client to get the right people talking to them. So, but it's over years of, you know, hopefully coming across as that you're not into gossip and you're not trying to set them up, or you're just trying to have a bit of fun. Yeah. And this environment has really nailed that down. And look, my interviews have always come from doing phoners, you know, the old school phoner for radio. And then, you know, the quick fire stuff on red carpets, because I love that, you know, explosive minute and a half of the first 30 seconds of a celebrity, mm-hmm. you know, going, who the hell is this animal? You know, this semi-bald, huge, sweaty guy.
Have they ever talked for a long time? Have you ever had one where it's like you were going in for the fun, quick and easy, and it turned into a two-hour sort of special?
Yeah. But well, on a red carpet, this happened early. It was like 2003 or the end of 2002. I think it was the red carpet for Analyze That, which was the sequel to Analyze This with Billy Crystal and Robert De Niro. And I was always, I called, you know, Brad Blanks at the arse end of the red carpet. I was a radio guy, and I was the only radio guy there, and I didn't have a camera. And I'm at the end with my little microphone and a mini disc recorder. They'll explain that to you later, Mr. 97, what a mini disc recorder
okay,
is.
Great.
And and I'd stand there, and Billy Crystal came along. It was freezing cold night, and everyone was wrapping up. Yeah, that's where I was, where all the other crews are wrapping up, and you're the last one standing there. And he stopped and talked, and I love Billy Crystal, but he was pissed off that he had to talk to me. I'm kind of like, well, you're pissed off, so I don't really want to talk to you. I love you, but you're being a prick. Yeah, you know, and we're chatting. Sorry, language. A bad guy.
Fine,
right, good, thank you. And I'm interviewing him, but the interview kept on going. I'm like, and he wasn't being good. It wasn't like a loving interview. I mean, it was freezing cold. We're all wrapped up. It's a December night, you know, and in New York, and I'm interviewing him, and the interview just wouldn't stop. And I'm
so
like,
so were you waiting for a cue from him? Like, surely you can just say, "Thanks so much. That was great. We've got everything we need."
Yeah, but the other side of me is like, this is Billy Crystal. He's talking, but he's not talking nice, loving stuff. You know, so that was always an interview that just didn't naturally end, even though it probably should have. Yeah. So, but look, I spend my whole career is built around interviewing people that don't really want to be interviewed by me, and then hopefully, and then seeing their pupils open up, you know, expand with a little bit of happiness at about the 40-second mark. And as you can see on my YouTube page, you'll see them when they finally go, "Oh, this guy's actually," and then this guy's not that bad. You know, he looks like a doofus, but we'll continue chatting to him. Now we know what's going on. But look, the whole game's changed again in interviews. You know, you've got the likes of talk show hosts now, like Fallon and Corden. They do the more personal style of interview now. Like carpool karaoke, I look at that and I say, well, Aussies and English talk show presenters have been doing that style of interview, what Corden does, for 30 years. It's just the Aussie and English personality. It's just that Corden managed to package that up and put it in a car, you know, that worked fantastically, don't get me wrong, but that style of personality is very different to what happens in interviews in the United States.
Have you got a go-to question, Brad? Just if you, like, if I put you in front of a celebrity right now, you don't know who they are, you just open your eyes and you have to ask something. What do you start with, other than
inspirational stuff, isn't it? This all is, and that'll bamboozle them.
How can
you knock the word inspiration? Like, oh, yeah, and by the time they get to that, then another thought will come in my head. But my go-to question's probably at the end, getting to the end, where I'm like, geez, I've got to finish on a laugh. I've got to finish on something upbeat, you know, positive. Yeah, you know, got to get a laugh here. I've got to get something, because this interview's going badly at the moment. And I always ask them to give me advice, you know, and 85% of the time it works. You know, do you have any advice for me, a 6'5", goofy, semi-balding, sweaty guy? And that will get something big, hopefully. You know, but there's still sometimes there's dead fishes. I interviewed last year, and I don't want to quickly relate that to them being dead fishes, because I love these two ladies, Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. It was the afternoon of a junket. It was for the morning show. I go in there. All the celebrities, all the actors in a part of that show are on high alert because it's, you know, all about, you know, sexual harassment in the workplace, and it just come off the Harvey Weinstein and the Ronan Farrow book, and it all been happened in, you know, Matt Lauer, you know, with the Today Show, and it was all within 5 days of each other, all those stories sort of re-bubbling up. And I go into the junket, the interview with them, and I just want to have a bit of fun. I'm not going in there to talk about, you know, like the sexual harassment or getting, you know, in trouble in the workplace and all this. And it was like a legal interview. It was like I was a lawyer. I was like Saul in Better Call Saul. I was like upbeat, pumped, talking to them, want to have fun with Jennifer Aniston and Reese, and they were just giving me cold stuff. And I tried, if you see that interview, I am sweating, like the Coldplay story I told you before. I am melting down in the interview, and I'm throwing everything I can just to get some laughs, and they just weren't going, you know.
How many times have you had Ricky Gervais? How many times have you spoke to him?
Yeah, I think I'm up to 19 times. Wow. 19
and,
times.
And so Ricky, at that point, yeah, like what's the relationship? Are you like, hey mate, are we friends now? Do you want to hang out? Do you want to have a beer? Like,
yeah, that's I know, I'd love to hang out with you. Yeah, look, I think we're professional mates, I guess. Yeah. You know, I'm far from a professional. Don't worry. You know,
your shirt's nice. You got a very professional shirt for a.
Yeah, no, I've just put this on. Yeah, I've got the cupboard next door with four clothes hangers of shirts, and I've been interchanging for the last 7 weeks. I have to bloody wash this one because I'm sweating profusely. Just about excitement of talking to you guys. But Gervais, I'd love to, you know, it'd be great to, you know, have a few beers and talk. But look, I think he's a bit of a recluse. I think he's just a chilled sort of guy. And, you know, and he's been interesting to watch. And it was interesting to talk to him during this whole period. I enjoyed he did a 1 p.m., a 6 p.m. British time. It was 6 p.m. where he do a stream on Twitter, and it was good getting an insight into his life. And he seems pretty relaxed and does a bit of writing. He binge watches so much television, and in this period you'd think everyone's binging. I'm not binging enough. I need to binge more. I can't actually find time to binge. Anyway, he's a good guy, and he's been very good to me. But it started in the early days where no one would interview him in the United States, and I'd be the only one interviewing Ricky. And that was in like 2005, 2006. So he'd have like his first comedy special, and HBO would call me in to interview him. And we'd do these like 25-minute, you know, sessions on a couch, and I just have a mate of mine holding a little camera, and we'd do these interviews, and they were great fun, and it's built a fun relationship, which is great.
Brad, you're pretty high energy. I think it's definitely something I noticed when I met you, and every time I've spoken to you or seen you since, still high energy. I guess still, you definitely would have to have, unless you're a robot, take your head off now. let's see your brain if it's real. No, but have you, what do you do when you get a bit low energy and you're on a red carpet? Because it is work. Sometimes you don't want to have to go to work.
And no.
You're like, I got to find something. What do you do?
Yeah. No, great question. No, it happens a lot. It more happens. Like, we're in this game, right, where it's only up to you. And in your, like, for you, Josh and Tommy, you get to bounce it off each other. I maybe get to talk to some people at the radio station that I work at, or more mates that aren't even in it. But you're constantly, you're playing with yourselves where you're at. So you can never, I've found you can never get ahead of yourself because you don't know where you are in what your career is or your ambition. You just got to wake up every day and sort of chase that thing you're never going to catch. And it's hard when no one tells you you're never going to catch it, but you got to keep on driving. So an example would be to go to a red carpet where I don't know if I'm going to get anyone. And I've got to stand there and you're kind of competing against, you know, people standing next to you on either side. But I've gone to red carpets where I've been totally flat going, what am I even doing here? And keeping myself open-minded enough where I might not get the star of the movie and they might just brush me and walk straight, but I'll get some reality star from a show that hasn't broken yet and it breaks the following week and that show's huge. Yet I've turned up and I've done this goofy interview where I really don't know anything about this person and we've turned it into 2 minutes of gold, just, you know, and I'm flat leading into that and I have something. So it proves that you've just got to keep turning up even when you're not flat and even if you think you're not going that well, you know, you're not getting ahead or you're not improving or whatever, you just got to, you know, I don't know, I mean, it's a psyching game, a self-psyching game to keep on pushing. Yeah.
And a bit of a deep one to end on. What do you dream about? What do you dream of? What do you think? Not as in like when you go to sleep, but what do you, when you daydream, when you think about the future, where do you go?
Yeah, it's really good because I think as I've, you know, you're married, kids, you know, life's worked out good in, you know, that regard. But you want to keep on improving in your jobs or, you know, and what you're, you know, our jobs are our passions in a way in what we're doing. And so you sit there and go, well, what's the perfect scenario? And maybe that is the issue that I haven't figured that part. What is a perfect scenario? What is perfect anyway? And from a dreaming point of view is I still love the moment of having a great chat. And like right now I'm loving talking to you guys. You know, we've became friends and I love that moment of having a connection with someone that can create that sort of explosiveness. And that just gets back to, you know, having a beer in the pub, you know, with as an 18-year-old in Cobram, and I'm sitting there talking to the 76-year-old guy, and he used to play full forward for Cobram, and we chat about how he was a good footballer. And that feeling then is the same feeling I enjoy today when I interview people.
Yeah. I think, like, it doesn't even matter who it is, whoever's met you, they always mention your energy because... Pete Shepherd, a mate of mine who you caught up with, he's the head coach at Alt MBA, Seth Godin's sort of program, and you caught up with Pete, and Pete described it as extremely high energy, and I think you'd had about six coffees.
I was off my head that day, Tommy. You should have seen me. Like, I felt bad. I hope you didn't think I was running to the toilet and doing something bad. I was jacked. What had happened to me is I'd stopped drinking, and I think I got him about 3 weeks into my not drinking, and I was running. I was training for the New York Marathon, so I was like going through this whole stage. I'm like jacked. And the poor guy got me at 100 miles an hour. And I was excited to meet him. And I'm a fan of Seth Godin's like you guys. And I wanted to hear everything about that. But the stuff going on in my head to him, we were in a diner and we didn't eat anything. the waitress was so pissed off. Yeah. Like,
and you were yelling a bit, like, yeah, when you were talking.
Yes, I was yelling, and I had to catch up, mate. I'm sorry. And what a great guy he is. He's like, no, bring it on, keep going. And he was encouraging me. The human periscope, right?
Human periscope, exactly.
Bloody good bloke. And he was due to come over. He emailed me a few months ago and said, I'll be in New York in April. And I was excited again. I was hoping to have a few beers with him, which hopefully would be a more subdued version than a fat guy training for a marathon that had lost about 10 kilograms and was drinking. Yeah, it was smashing.
He loved it. He was like, it was a highlight of his New York. Like, you know, I think that's what makes trips, right? Meeting people and
so good.
You know, you'd rather be memorable than.
Boring. Next time I'll try and act like a straight man. Big Pete again. But I hope you guys are fired. I hope I've been like a fluffer.
You've been great.
I'm fired up, definitely.
Yeah, good. Well, I commend what you're doing, and I know you're going to have fantastic guests, and it's wonderful. And say hello to George as well. All the better. Look forward to meeting him. And Mr. 97, you're a champion, mm-hmm. and the young bloke.
Charles,
Charles.
To Charles. He's in the green. Yeah. We've set up a virtual green room.
It did definitely come through to YouTube. Just PS, because I saw
did
it
go
on
to YouTube.
It did a shot on CP from Quadlock. He took a photo of the screen. He was just loving it.
Oh, really?
I definitely saw Charles there.
Oh, that's interesting. So,
yeah, unless that was Charles. Unless it was Charles taking a photo of his own screen.
Oh, no, that could have been. Yeah. Anyway, I've pushed it across anyway. So there we go.
Brad, thanks, mate. And I'm looking forward to can you be nice to us when you come back on in like 20 hours or something? Can you?
Yeah, at least be very nice.
Just pump us up.
Can you interview very us? Very nice. It'll be weird. It will get real fucking weird.
What I know, I'll interview you guys, all right? We'll ask you about. We'll do a bit of news because it'll be 2 p.m.
Okay,
great. Yeah, but. Bit of New York news. What's going on in the world? You know, what's happened? Great. And be a good time. Friday afternoon, we'll do a stock market report, something like that.
I'll be talking shit. Don't worry about that, mate.
Yeah, pump guys. Well, wonderful. Good luck. Go get 'em.
Awesome.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Brad.